Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about tolerance. Somewhere in the course of this hour, I'd like to delve a little deeper into this whole notion that to say that Jesus is the only way of salvation is somehow viewed as intolerant in our society. It has led, sad to say, to a very different light being cast upon the task of Christian evangelism. It's now called proselytization, with a very derogatory tone. Is it intolerant for Christians to go and say, not only is Jesus the only way of salvation, not only is that my belief and opinion, but it's actually objectively and universally true, and it is a view that you yourself ought to also have? Now, that used to be called, in kind of rough terms, Christian evangelism. Is that intolerant? Our guest during this hour, Greg Kokel, he'll join us here in just a moment. You join us as well. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. We'll let you stay on the line if you need to hear the response to your question or your comment. And if you're getting a busy signal at this time, we will be freeing up phone lines for the rest of you. 1-800-730-2727. If you prefer, we have that in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The best callers and emailers this hour will receive the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air, co-authored by our guest, Greg Kokel. He is founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. He's co-author of this book, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. Greg, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Greg, let's go straight to the phones. Jesse's waiting there in Oakdale, Minnesota, calling on the line. Jesse, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, can you guys hear me okay?
Sure can.
Yeah, all righty. Actually, instead of a question, I had sort of a weird experience about a month ago, I'd say, with a friend of mine, a non-Christian friend at my college campus here in Minnesota. And we were talking about spiritual things, and he said something that most non-Christians wouldn't say. He said, you know, I think it's really weird when people say there is no truth, because how could that be true? And so I said, well, why do you think so many people believe that? And he's like, well, I don't know. And so we've had different spiritual conversations, and I was able to share the gospel with him last week. And, you know, I was talking about sin and violation of God's law and God's judgment. And at the end, he said, well, what's the point of being a Christian if there's no way we can be saved, if it's impossible? So then I told him about, you know, Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. And I said, well, does that make sense? You know, Jesus dying on the cross to save us from hell? And he's like, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But it was so interesting that a non-Christian would say, yeah, I think that's really ridiculous. So I just wanted to tell that to you guys.
Jesse, thank you very much.
Yeah, Jesse, that's a great observation there, and I thank you for sharing that with us. You know, it makes me think of when I was a carpenter out in Riverside. Riverside is inland from the Los Angeles area, and the wind blows from the west to the east in this area, which means that Riverside County on the inland gets all of the smog. And in the summer, it's especially bad. And I was working as a carpenter one summer out there in my with a buddy, and the smog was so bad it was really wiping us out. And finally, my buddy said, "Gee, I can't take this anymore. I got to take a break. I'm going to go out back and have a smoke." And he didn't see the contradiction between the claim that he had made about the smog killing him and then his response to that, like, have a smoke. And this is exactly what Jesse ran into here with his friend, who made the clear observation that when you make a claim that there is no truth, that is a claim to know a truth, that truth being that there is no truth, which is contradictory. And the reason that I think people say this so often is they've just been socialized by their community, by their by their university and liberal influence, just to believe that, or to say they believe it, at least initially. And it's clear that people haven't thought much about this, Todd, because if they think, like Jesse's non-Christian friend did, about the issue for just a moment, they realize, well, wait, this is silly. There's got to be some kind of truth. And then it opens the door to be able to talk about what that truth actually is. And this is the heart of my tactical approach to this issue, to help people to see, by asking the right questions, that this is a foolish way of talking and thinking about it. Your truth, my truth, there is no truth, all of this silliness. And to get down to the real thing and to discuss what can we know and why do we know this, and then start talking about spiritual matters. And it was so great the way Jesse started with the bad news first before he got into the good news in good Lutheran form, law and gospel. So good for Jesse.
Michelle is calling from San Francisco. And Michelle, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle.
I'm going to have to stay on the line so I can listen to your answer.
Okay.
I'm a new babe in Christ, and my husband is not saved, and he was a philosophy major, and he is going to talk circles around me. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to define what is truth. I have to define that for him to help him come to Christ.
Okay.
All right, Michelle, stay on the line there, and you can hear the response to that question. Greg?
First, at the risk of sounding self-serving, I think it would be really valuable, Michelle, for you to get a copy of Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. You're going to need a little bit more substance, a background material, to talk with your husband intelligently. Now, when you ask the question, what is truth, this is an ambiguous question that could mean two different things. It could mean, what do we mean by the word truth? And by the word truth, we mean any claim that actually fits the way the world really is. Okay, so if I say I'm sitting here at my desk talking on the phone on a radio program on the web, and I am, then my statement is true. In other words, the claim that I'm making or the belief that I happen to have accurately represents the way the world really is. And so that's what the term truth means. Now, somebody might say, well, what is truth? That is, what is an accurate description of the way the world really is? And then the question is going to be, okay, give me a category. If you're talking about the color of my library here, I can tell you that. If you're talking about the number of people in the state of California, I can tell you that. And there are lots of ways that we know particular truths about the world, but the real key question is, what is the truth about religion? That's what we're talking about. Well, that's a much more difficult one to answer, but I think one thing that we can do that will help us tremendously is to look at the person Jesus. I believe Christianity is true regarding religious claims because I think Jesus had credibility and he spoke with authority, and he's worthy of our consideration. When he claimed to be the way, the truth, and the life, I think that the evidence is that he actually substantiated that claim. Now, look, this is the kind of claim I could be mistaken about because it could be either true or false, but I'm not just making this up and I'm not emoting. And a good book on Christian apologetics or Christian defenses that might be helpful for you, Michelle, at this particular point, and A Case for Christ is one that you might want to consider by Lee Strobel. A Case for Faith is a follow-up one by him. But these are books that are meant to show that the Christian claims are actually true, part of the larger issue of the truth about the world. When we claim that we know the truth, we claim that our views fit the world the way it really is, and then we can give reasons why we think that our claims are justified. Now, this is the way you need to approach your husband, I think, as you talk to him about Christianity. I think it'd be helpful for you to know the material that's in the Relativism book, because it'll give you a foundation that you may not have that he will already be familiar with.
Now, Michelle, I want you to stay on hold there, if you will. My producer will get to you in just a second. We'll get your name and your mailing address, and we will send you a copy of Greg Kokel's book, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair, to get you started on that conversation with your husband. Rick is calling from Chicago. Rick, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks. It says in Matthew 19:4, Jesus said, "He which made them at the beginning made them male and female." But the popular public school teaching is that there are eons of bloodshed, disease, pain, and death for human beings to come onto earth. And how would you try and obfuscate a statement if you were an ordinary evolutionist? If I said to you, either all there is behind unpleasantness on earth is the form giver to the universe, or all the unpleasantness on earth results from our ignorance and rebelling against the form giver,
okay,
the universe.
Rick, thank you very much. I think he's asking about really kind of the origin of evil or the problem of evil question.
Okay. Yeah.
We've got about a minute and a half, by the way, before
this
break.
Yeah, it's a tough question to answer if that is the question in a minute and a half. But let me just put it simply. Evil is not part of God's original plan. It is not something God created. It's a circumstance that results. It is a missing part of good, as it were. It's a hole in goodness that results when human beings use their freedom to rebel against their maker. I think Genesis, the first couple of chapters, the first three chapters, talk about God creating everything that's good, and then something happens with a good thing that God creates, a human being who has the ability to make moral choices, when he uses that freedom to rebel against God. So human beings, through a misuse of their free will, brought evil into the universe. They are the ones who are ultimately responsible for it, not God.
Greg Kokel is our guest. Tolerance is the subject. When we come back, more of your questions and your comments on that subject. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Greg Kokel is founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, and co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. We also have that in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We'll be right back.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7. Including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss American civil religion with Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. One nation under God, God bless America, in God we trust. Is this God, the God of American civil religion, the same God worshipped by Christians? We'll talk about it next week on Issues Etc. Dr. David Adams will be our guest. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing on the program for the month of May, go to our website, issuesetc.org. There you'll find a list of topics and guests for the weeks ahead. While you're there, be sure to read several articles written by our guest during this hour, Greg Kokel, on the issue of tolerance. The website address again, issuesetc.org. Greg, going back to our last caller, is there a relationship between another prevailing notion, that is evolution, and the relativism of truth? Do those two ideas go together in some way?
Well, they wouldn't go together in terms of the relativism of truth. The concept of evolution belongs to the scientific, Darwinian evolution here, the scientific arena. And the scientific arena is built squarely upon a modernist view of the universe. That is, that there are things that are true and there are things that are false, and that we have a rational capacity. The laws of reason can be used to determine the difference between truth and error. So, and here I'm going to use a fancy two-bit word, but I'll explain what I mean. Epistemologically, that is, how we know what we know, our view of the way knowledge works, is the same for Christians as it is for those who believe in evolution. Now, what we believe is actually true about the matter might be different, but we share the way our understanding about how knowledge works, that there are true things and that exploration can, inductive and deductive reasoning, the laws of logic can all be pressed into service to help us to determine what is actually true. So we're in the same camp in our view of knowledge. We just have different views about what that knowledge amounts to, about what is true and what is false. However, evolution does affect a different aspect of relativism, not the broad relativism of all truth, but relativism with regards to morality. Because those who are Darwinian evolutionists, or at least a large number of them, certainly the majority probably, are not theists in any meaningful sense. And they believe, Stephen Jay Gould, who has just died not too long ago, and one of the most well-known evolutionists from Harvard University, as Stephen Jay Gould basically said, there is no God, and we are just basically stuck with the world as it is. Now, if there is no God, and evolution accounts for the development of everything, then there can't be any morality in any real sense of the word. Morality turns out to be a trick that evolution played upon us. We think in moral terms. We talk as if morality were true, but this isn't actually the case. We just act, quote-unquote, morally because evolution has tricked us into doing this. And so from a moral perspective, morals are relative in an evolutionary paradigm, but not all truth is relative.
Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Now, if you've been trying to call and getting a busy signal, we do have one open line still waiting there that has not lit up, 1-800-730-2727. Calling from Austin, Texas, Trent is on the line. Trent, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi. The discussion tonight just fascinates me, and it put me in mind of a quote I've heard expressed by Hank Henegram. I can't remember exactly what it is, but he speaks of, as far as tolerance goes, when it comes to people, it's a good thing to be tolerant. But when it comes to truth, it's a travesty to be tolerant. Mm-hmm. And I always try to remember that when I'm talking to people about what they consider their truth and my truth.
Trent, thank you very much. We're getting a terrible breakup on your line, so we'll have to let you go here.
Yeah.
Greg, you made a point like that a little bit earlier. Reiterate that, if you would.
Right, yeah. Hank's a friend, and I've actually written a piece for the Christian Research Journal that deals specifically with this, the tolerance of intolerance. I should say the intolerance of tolerance is the title of it, and it made the point that Trent was just pointing out. That is that we ought to be tolerant of persons, that is, respectful of persons and treating people equally with equal respect and care and kindness, but not treating all ideas equally. As Peter Kreft put it, we should be egalitarian about people, but we should be elitist about ideas. An elitist is a snob. In other words, he thinks he's better than someone else, and that's actually the way we should be about ideas, that we should think that some ideas are better than others. And it's not only that we should think of ideas that way, Todd and Trent, we actually do. Even the so-called relativists, the postmodernists, they all think that their ideas are better than other people's ideas, and particularly on this issue. They think that their views are actually true, and this is why they complain to us when we voice our views, because they think we're actually in error. Now, they might find some passive-aggressive, fancy-schmancy postmodern way of putting it that doesn't make it sound like they're putting you down and telling you're wrong, but in fact that's just what they're doing.
Now, what about this, Greg? We've got about 3 minutes here before we got to go to the break.
Okay.
Someone will, and I've heard this more and more often as time goes by, since no one can seem to agree, and if you get five people into a room, you have five or six opinions among them, that is proof positive. No one can land upon a truth or agree upon a truth, there must not be a truth there. It's kind of a distortion of the old blind men and the elephant story.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it simply doesn't follow that if people disagree on something, there's no right answer. And I actually don't know how people get to that spot when you think about it. Listen, there was a time when some people thought the Earth was round and some people thought it was flat, right? Did from the fact of their disagreement, did the Earth suddenly become formless, that nobody was actually correct on this issue? I mean, it simply doesn't follow that because there are disagreements about things, that nobody's right. Now, it might turn out that it may be difficult to figure out who's correct, but you can't simply say nobody could be right on this issue because there are disagreements. That's the first point. The second point is, it's just false that no one can seem to agree. You and I agree on a lot of vital things with regards to religion. This is why I'm on your show. And so do a multitude of other Christians. Now, what they might be saying is that there's virtually nothing that everybody, all people, agree on. And to that I might say, yes, except for maybe the idea that there's nothing that all people agree on. They all agree on that. But what follows from that? Nothing meaningful follows from the fact that all people don't agree on every single thing. I mean, so? Why would somebody say that there can't be anything true based on that? So it doesn't seem to be a very, very helpful statement.
It reminds me a little bit of someone who would say, everyone's culinary tastes differ. Therefore, there is no food.
Yeah, that's right. Or nothing tastes good, you know. It's crazy. It's like this, what they call this a non sequitur in reasoning, and it just means you can't get there from here, you know. It doesn't follow, and people do this kind of thing all the time.
Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about tolerance. You can join us, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls. Greg Kokel is founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, and co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. You know, it's easy to want to draw one's head back into your shell and your legs and everything else and your tail and simply sit there carefully enclosed in your own truth as a Christian, because it's going to be challenged wherever you go. It's easy to want to do that. But that tortoise-like posture is, to my way of thinking, simply another way not only of failing to engage truth and error as it really exists in the world, but also of giving into the notion that, well, everyone's got their own truth, when you fail to even exercise that kind of discernment. And this is something that Christians in particular may be guilty of, saying, yeah, I know there are people out there who disagree with me, and they're wrong, and maybe they're so wrong that they have denied Christ and are even going to hell, but I don't want to think about that right now. That's just another form of relativism. We'll be right back. When a Christian confesses his sins and hears the words of Christ's forgiveness, is that a Roman Catholic practice? What's the difference between conflict resolution and Christian reconciliation? You'll find answers to these questions in our new Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness by Ted Kober of Peacemaker Ministries. Call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask to receive our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. You can also order the book online. Go to our website at issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, and you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. Call 1-800-325-3040 for our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. 1-800-325-3040.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
God isn't finished teaching. Are you just too sinful to receive the Lord's Supper? I'm Pastor Todd Wilkin. Today we continue the question, who should receive the Lord's Supper? A common misunderstanding about the Lord's Supper is that in order to be worthy to receive it, one has to be free of sin. Well, if I had to be free from sin before I took the Lord's Supper, could I ever take it? And who would need the Lord's Supper if he were free from sin? Your sin shouldn't keep you from going to the Lord's Supper. It is, in fact, the very reason you should go. The more sinful you are, the more you need Jesus' body and blood. This holy meal is for sinners, and for sinners only. After all, what does Jesus promise in this supper? He promises forgiveness, right? Well, who needs forgiveness? none other than sinners like me and you. Everyone who eats and drinks with Jesus declares himself to be a sinner in need of forgiveness. Sinner, don't let your sin keep you away from the Lord's table. Sinner, take and eat his body. Take and drink his blood. It is for your forgiveness.
Noted author and Christian apologist Craig Hawkins on why you should support Issues Etc.
It's my pleasure to recommend to you Issues Etc. It's one of the few programs discussing crucial concerns for Christians. It's done in a dynamic format, again discussing crucial issues, and in an insightful manner. The program is very much needed. In my opinion, it's one of the most important broadcasts on the air, and it's one of my favorites. So if you want to grow in your faith, know what you believe and why, then this program is for you. I want to encourage you to listen, and I want to encourage you to support the broadcast, both prayerfully and financially.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift this week. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can make a credit card donation by calling our resource line. That number is 1-800-737-0172.
Issues Etc. is looking for one member from each Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation to become our official lay representative. Responsibilities simply involve promotion of Issues Etc. in your local church. Now, if you're interested, leave your name, phone number, and mailing address, and your congregation's name, city, and state on our automated resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about tolerance. He's founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. You can check out the website for Stand to Reason. Go to our website at issuesetc.org. When you get there, you can click on the Links with Regular Guests link, and there you'll find a direct link to Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason. Or if you'd like to receive their free Solid Ground newsletter, call our automated resource line at 1-800-737-0172, and we'll give you the phone number and mailing address for Stand to Reason, 1-800-737-0172. Back to the phones. Chan is calling from San Bruno, California. Chan, thank you for waiting, and welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi. I have an issue in regards to different interpretations. I'm constantly hearing this. That's just your interpretation. And maybe this is an easy one. The first one I want to talk about is worship. I've been coming across a lot of groups out here in the San Francisco area, and they're using lots of songs that don't even contain any mention to Christ or God. And,
yes, that's true.
And so is this an example of postmodernism? Or?
Well, actually, you raised two issues here, one about interpretation and one about worship. I think the worship issue is a problem, and I think it's an influence of the postmodern mindset, which is increasingly self-centered. And so you have not so much the truth of Christianity and God's character being promoted, but rather the truth of one's own experience of God that's being promoted in the music. So I think it's an influence of postmodernism. And it's an expression to some degree of relativism in which one's experience is what's most important. And so what happens is Christians end up celebrating and worshiping their experience rather than worshiping the true God. Does that make sense to you?
It makes sense to me. And I got in trouble. I told the person that this was basically, this wasn't worship, is what I told her.
Well, you might ask her, what is worship? Well, worship is ascribing worth to God, worth-ship, you know, and not just singing
now,
about our feelings.
Now, Greg, I don't want to get too far afield off the subject here, because he did raise the other issue of, and it's kind of another one of these trump cards.
Sure.
And that's just your interpretation. Now, you, Greg, are a Calvinist, and I am a Lutheran. We agree on a lot of things, as you mentioned before, but we also disagree very pointedly on a number of things, like teachings about the Lord's Supper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we'd be honest enough to say that I think you're wrong and you think I'm wrong. You have your interpretation. I have my interpretation, but I believe your interpretation
right.
is wrong. You believe mine is wrong, but We're brothers in Christ, and I love you.
I'm very tolerant of your mistaken view, Todd.
as am I of yours, yes.
That's right. Now, this issue about interpretation, this is where I have to, again, sound like a broken record, because when somebody says, that's just your interpretation, I'm going to ask them what they mean by that. Because it could mean two different things. It could mean that all interpretations are equal. That would be kind of a relativistic approach. Well, I have my interpretation, you have your interpretation, he has his interpretation, and they're all equal. Now, if that's the case, then there's no grounds for a person to object to my view, because I can say anything I want. I actually think that's a bizarre way of looking at the Bible, because it seems to me that there are some things that follow from the words on the page and some things that don't have anything to do with it. I'm looking right now at Matthew 19 here. I just happened to glance at the Bible. Jesus said, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. Now, if I said, well, what my interpretation is, Jesus means that whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman does not commit adultery. Well, my interpretation seems to say exactly the opposite of what the text says. And this is why I want to push people then to the point that not all interpretations are legitimate. Probably what they mean when they say that's just your interpretation is that my interpretation is mistaken and theirs is actually correct. Okay, well, now we're making progress. Now they can explain to me why they think that I have misunderstood the meaning of the words of Jesus, and they're going to be forced then to take me back to the text and show me from the words. And that is a legitimate discussion, frankly. But when people just say, well, that's just your interpretation, this is another one of those passive-aggressive tricks that is meant to brush you off and tell you that you're actually wrong without actually saying that you're wrong. That your interpretation is true for you, I have my interpretation, and it's true for me. This is nonsense that gets us nowhere. And I use the question to try to get down to something that is worth discussing.
Now, it used to be, and I think this ties in here, there's a listener who's emailed us with a question. It used to be that in the ecumenical movement, Greg, there were differences that were recognized and they were considered relevant and they would sit down and dialogue.
Right.
That was considered true ecumenism, disagreeing rather than brushing these things over. But a listener does write and ask, that's kind of the modern ecumenical movement. The listener asks, where does the postmodern ecumenical movement fit into this discussion of tolerance?
Well, a postmodern ecumenical movement would be deeply pluralistic when it comes to religious claims. And in other words, they would say that all religions are equally legitimate ways of finding God. And so they would be like, really, like Unitarians would believe that. I'm trying to think of the name of the religion that has like the eight doors that go into the center of the room, and can't think of that right now, but those are like that. And that's the modern view. All religions are equally legitimate. Now, of course, I have to ask that question again, what do you mean by that? Because it could mean two different things. It could mean that all religions are equally legitimate because God is happy with all attempts to reach him. Now, that may be the case, but notice that when a person says that pluralism is true and that's what they mean, that God is happy with everybody trying and being sincere, that is an actual claim of knowledge about God. And my question is going to be, well, how do you know that God is happy about all these things? You seem to know what God's mind is on this issue and that he's happy with everybody. And when I think I know what God's mind is on the issue, that Jesus is the only way, well, you get real upset with me, and what do you counter with? What you think God's mind is on the issue, you know, and then it doesn't seem like it's arrogant at all. So they might mean pluralism in that sense, that God is happy with everything, but they're going to have to explain to me how they know that. And then secondly, it could also mean that all religions are equally true in the sense that none are really true at all. That, as Marx said, religion is the opiate of the people. It's just something we do to make ourselves feel better. Religion is just a placebo. There's no real sickness. There's no real medicine. And so you can choose your fantasy, and any fantasy is as good as the next. Now, that's the other sense that it could be true, that all religions are equal. But that's also another kind of claim. It's the claim that no religion is actually true, and it strikes me that that is rather a bold claim to know something, and it requires a defense. So my tactic here, Todd, is always to ask enough questions to get the other person to realize that he's actually making a rather extravagant claim, and that he has an obligation to defend that claim. Now, I'm in a position to defend mine. I'm very glad to defend my claims, and I have some capability to do that, but I expect that they should be able to do the same.
Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. Calling from St. Paul, Minnesota, Daniel's on the line. Daniel, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello.
Hello, Daniel.
Hi,
yeah.
Dan.
I think the term intolerance is sometimes used by non-Christians to describe what really is disrespectful, depending on how they're being proselytized by the Christian.
Uh-huh.
Daniel, thank you very much. That raises something you mentioned before, Greg, regarding there is genuine arrogance, an arrogance of attitude, or a genuine intolerance of attitude.
Right.
Tell us about that again.
Well, I mean, people can, on either side of the aisle here, can be nasty and arrogant in the way that they comport themselves, and this is unattractive, and it's unnecessary for Christians to be that way, and it's just plain old wrong. We're to be good ambassadors for Christ. We can also be inappropriately dogmatic, and that is, make the claim that our view is right with no sense of humility that we might be mistaken about our view. Now, this is controversial to say this, and some of your listeners may not agree, Todd, but I actually tell people that I could be mistaken on my view. And the reason I say that is because I'm not God. I'm not omniscient. I am prone to mistakes, and our own biases can get in the way. I mentioned, though, I could be mistaken. I don't think I am. I'm not making this up. I'm not just emoting. I have an argument. I have reasons to believe what I believe. But I say that I might be mistaken because I realize that I could be, and what it does is it takes a little edge off, takes away the inappropriate dogmatism that some Christians come across with. And when we are inappropriately dogmatic, Todd, it really makes the other people... It galvanizes them. They get more resistant, you know, because now they've got turf to defend against us, and the fight is on. I'd rather try to get not head-to-head with people, but side-to-side with people, trying to make sense of this strange thing we call life, and give him or her my best ideas with the understanding that I might be making mistakes here and inviting them to help me to find what the mistakes are.
Although I wouldn't want to leave it, and I think the tendency might be, if we kind of lack the courage of our convictions, to simply leave it as, well, okay, here are my views, I might be wrong, there are your views, you admit you might be wrong, let's shake hands and go our merry way.
Well, this is, and I don't intend that to be the impact, because I hope it's clear that I have the courage of my convictions, but it's a willingness to say that I might be in error. We're not saying it's a coin toss. It's a jump ball here. I got lots of reasons, but what I'm willing to do is engage people and talk and to listen and to let's put our information down and let the best idea win. And I am willing to do that precisely because I am very confident in my view. When we are inappropriately dogmatic, that really communicates a lack of confidence. And our view looks weaker then. So that's a good qualification you made.
Let's take a phone call here. We'll have to take the answer on the other side of the break. Calling from Neenah, Wisconsin. Chris, thank you for waiting and welcome to Issues Etc. Got less than a minute here, Chris.
I just have a question about witnessing. It's when you're talking with somebody and they bring up the other religions, such as Buddhism, Muslim, Islam. They say, well, so you're saying that these people are wrong? And then I bring up the statement that Jesus made about, I am the way, the truth, and the life.
So where's your question there, Chris?
Where people are telling me that I'm wrong and I'm trying to witness, and there's so much proof that Jesus walked the earth.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. When we get back, how would you respond, Greg? And how would you respond, folks? Someone says, are you telling me, by saying that Jesus is the only way, the truth, and the life, that there are no other avenues to God save through Christ and Him crucified, are you telling me that all the Buddhists are wrong? Are you telling me that all the Hindus are wrong? Are you telling me that all the other religions of the world offering their various avenues, ways, and paths to God are actually dead ends? We'll get the answer to that question from Greg Kokel when we come back.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If Christian doctrine can be true or false, can Christian practice also be true or false? Is Christian practice always neutral? What's the relationship between Christian doctrine and Christian practice? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. You'll find answers to these questions in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal. I've written an article titled Doctrine and Practice, and you can receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. I've also written an article on the Lord's Supper titled Responding to Real Absence Arguments. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources on issues such as American evangelicalism, church history, biblical interpretation, and much more. Ask to receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal, 1-800-737-0172. If you'd like to order a cassette copy of this two-hour discussion on tolerance with Greg Kokel for a cost of $10, or if you'd like to know how to contact Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason, or if you'd like to make a donation to Issues Etc., call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. You can also write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Greg, before the break, we had Chris on the line. He asked the simple question. If you say, and it's the scenario, how do you respond to this? You say Jesus is the only way of salvation. Does that mean you are saying that all other religions are dead ends, that all other religions aren't true?
Well, the answer to that is yes. I mean, it's a simple answer, and actually, this can't be avoided. And let me just give you an illustration. It's very simple. Jesus claimed to be the Messiah. He either is the Messiah or he's not the Messiah. Now, Christians think that he is. Jews think that he's not. If Jesus is not the Messiah, then the Jews are right and the Christians are wrong. But if he is the Messiah, then the Christians are right and the Jews are wrong. But under no circumstances can they both be basically right. And so the claim to any particular claim to truth of necessity eliminates as false anything that contradicts it. In this case, if Jesus actually is not the Messiah, it is the case that the Jews are correct on this and necessarily the case that the Christians are not correct on this. In fact, this shouldn't be offensive to anybody in any religious view, for example. Muslims of all people are not offended by this. And the reason they're not offended is they actually think we're wrong and they're right, for goodness sake, and they understand that it's one or the other, it can't be both and. The same is true of Buddhists. Buddhists think that their view of the world, which is contradictory to Christianity, is actually a correct view. If their view is correct, then ours must be false by force of logic. Even if they don't say that it's false, it must be, because that's the way clear thinking works. And when you talk to these people, of course, they all hold their views because they think their views are actually correct, and they don't hold other views because they think they're false. So there is no way to avoid this, and I want to remind people that the claim that Jesus is the only way is only the Christian's claim, because it's Jesus' own claim. It's the claim he made for himself. It's the claim that those who he trained to follow after him, his apostles, consistently made for himself, and we as followers of Christ simply repeat that claim. Now, if people don't like this, and I'm very happy to tell this to folks, if you don't like this, don't be mad at me. I didn't invent this. In fact, if it were up to me, I'd change that rule, you know. If you're basically a nice guy, you say, have a nice day, come on down, you can be in my heaven. The problem is, Todd, it's not my heaven. It's Jesus' heaven, and he's the one who decides who gets in or not. He made the claim, take it up with him.
Robert writes from Austin, another celebrated word is diversity. Corporations boast of it in their employment ads but don't define it. Meanwhile, a shoe store manager explained to me once that his company exported the manufacturing of jobs because in its U.S. factories they had too many different languages to manage. What policies are hidden behind this word, diversity?
Yeah, that's a good, an insightful observation, because diversity is another one of these code words that is tied closely into postmodernism, as if diversity were really a moral good. If you don't have diversity, that's not good. If you are diverse, then it's great. But the question is, what do you mean by diversity? And here we are back to that same issue again. I'll tell you what diversity means. It means skin color and sexual preference. That's all it means. And it's interesting because liberals who promote this idea are quick to say that skin color is meaningless and sexual behavior is meaningless, and this is why we shouldn't make distinctions based on either. Yet they are quick also to say that we ought to diversify in those ways, skin color, ethnicity, and sexual preference, because this is a good thing. Well, listen, if those things are ultimately meaningless, why is it important then to celebrate those things as aspects of diversity that we all have to somehow acknowledge? Frank Beckwith made a great observation in the area of diversity, Todd. He said, why is it for these people that are always promoting diversity that everybody thinks the same way? You know, it's funny, many of the listeners were not probably watching the Academy Awards, but I caught a little bit of it before I came on the air. And Steve Martin was making a joke. He was talking about how there are so many, that the actors and actresses can be so many different things. They could be tall, they could be short, they could be this and that. And then he got into public distinctions, political distinctions. He said they could be Democrats or... And then there was this long, pregnant pause, which is the point that there are no Republicans in Hollywood. You know, that's the way it seems. Point being, these people who believe in diversity only believe in diversity on things that are inconsequential by their own definition, but not in diversity about things that really matter, diversity of ideas. They are not tolerant in this way. They are politically correct, and they punish people who break ranks with their politically correct way of thinking.
Now, I'm going to read this next one slowly and give you about a minute to answer, because I do have a final question to wrap this up. This is from David. He writes this. I find the intolerance of the tolerant for the intolerant difficult to tolerate. If you can sort that out, what's your reaction, Greg?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what he's getting at, unless the medium itself is the message. That is, that a lot of this talk about tolerance and intolerance coming from the left is just gobbledygook. And this really brings us full circle from the place we started 2 hours ago. All of this talk about tolerance and intolerance really is not promoting any meaningful, virtuous sense of tolerance, but rather is a way for one group of people, the politically correct, to enforce their political correctness on others while sounding virtuous and sounding tolerant and sounding open-minded when they are neither virtuous, tolerant in any meaningful sense, nor open-minded. It's just a passive-aggressive tolerance trick.
Is Christian evangelism, and it used to be said without derogatory connotation, Christian proselytization.
Right.
Is Christian evangelism an exercise in intolerance?
Well, it certainly would be by the modern definition of the term. If intolerance means that you believe that all ideas are not equal, but rather that your point of view is more important, more valuable, more true than another one, then I gladly accept the characterization of being intolerant, because I do believe that the claims of Christ are not only true, and therefore the claims of others in other religions where they disagree would be false, but I claim that. But my view is that Jesus' claims and what Jesus did actually is the only source of vital rescue for people who are dying of a deadly disease called sin. If Jesus' claims were actually true, then it is good news to communicate those claims to other people. It is actually rescuing them from a terrible circumstance that they find themselves in, and we ought to be proud to be able to proclaim that message, even if people characterize it as intolerance.
Greg Kokel, thank you very much again for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Great talking with you, Todd. Just give me a call anytime.
We will. Greg Kokel is founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, and he's co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. I do not think we can put the genie back into the bottle on this particular issue. The definition of tolerance has been rewritten, and I doubt that we will be able to write it back as it was for so long anytime soon. On that issue of Christian evangelism, of speaking the truth that Christ spoke first and gave to us to proclaim, that forgiveness of sins, life, and salvation reside only in Him, that He is the definitive and final revelation of who God is, God in the flesh, Jesus Christ, crucified and risen from the dead, as the sacrifice for the sins of all mankind, wherein in Him we find life, salvation, eternal life. I doubt that we will be able to speak that message anytime soon without being accused of being intolerant. But this should not cause us to cower or to question whether or not it is a worthwhile task to speak for Christ. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. We don't have to shout it louder over against those accusations of intolerance. But we do need to continue to speak it. And engaging the falsehoods that are out there, the false ways to God, in as whimsical a way as we possibly can, yet not giving any ground on the truth. There is this truth, this one truth that saves, Jesus Christ. He didn't mean that the task of proclaiming it would be easy. In fact, I think being called intolerant is probably just the latest in a bag of tricks trying to silence the message of the gospel. But the message cannot be silenced because the message is true. And that this truth doesn't only have the force of our convictions behind it, it has the power of God behind it, the power of God for salvation for everyone who believes. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.